Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Yeah, I got to get my rest. It's Monday, April the 27th. It's 8:11. Time for entertainment news. Cindy Perlman-Gaber in Las Vegas. The Michael Jackson movie was supposed to be a big hit, but it was even bigger than anyone thought, wasn't it, Cindy?
Good morning, Bob. It's a thriller indeed. The Michael Jackson biopic shattered box office records. It made $97 million domestically, another $120 million for a worldwide take of $217 million in its first weekend. It does make it the biggest opening weekend for a musical biopic in history. The record was previously held by Straight Outta Compton in 2015, actually, about NWA, and that only debuted to $60 million. And Bohemian Rhapsody, number three, about Freddie Mercury, only $51 million. And of course, Michael was number one, way behind him was Super Mario, Galaxy Movie, and Project Hail Mary.
Yes, and there's going to be another one, maybe two more Michael movies, isn't there?
Incredible. They're talking about two more Michael movies. They think this will play overseas for a year at their box offices, which is incredible. So they're going right into production with his nephew, Jafar, as Michael. And he got raves, the movie not so much, but people didn't care. They still want to see what Michael Jackson was all about.
Well, you will talk about the controversy surrounding the movie coming up shortly. Let's talk about Cyndi Lauper, where you are in Las Vegas. How is that going?
Well, it's going, Bob. It turns out that girls just want to take no guff. Poor Cyndi, she opened her residency. This is supposed to be her last type of this thing in Vegas this weekend. And she had a heckler. Some heckler yelled out, because Cyndi talks a lot in these concerts. She tells old stories. And someone yelled out that she should stick to singing and not talking. And instead of letting it go, she responded by saying, "Please remember where you are, okay? If you're trying to shade me, word deleted, I'm going to come for you. I'm from Brooklyn, and if I want to talk, word deleted, I'll do a tap dance if I word deleted want to." So Cyndi didn't take it down very quietly. The moral of the story, do not mess with Cyndi Lauper.
Girls just want to fight, apparently. We haven't seen the new White Lotus yet, but already there have been some changes. What's going on?
Shocking changes. We could call this Le Bummer, because the whole thing's set in France. Helena Bonham Carter, after they started filming, pulled out last week. She said that it's not for her, and really said not much at all. And the role is being revamped and will be recast. What happened? Mike White is such a great writer and director. Nobody even knows what happened. But the two-time Oscar nominee left after a few days of filming, and it was a nice shoot. It's all being shot at the French Riviera. She shot her first scenes, but felt the character was not what it should be. And apparently Mike White is taking it in stride. He's going to rethink the role. He said he hopes that she would work with him again, and he's a major fan.
That's about a year away, isn't it?
About a year away, and they finally leaked a little bit of the plot. It's going to take place at the Cannes Film Festival, which is pretty cool. It's going to be in Cannes, Saint-Tropez, and Monaco, plus Paris. And two great additions to the cast, Heather Graham and Rosie Perez. Those are two good ones. We'll see what they are up to.
Since Ellen DeGeneres signed off of her talk show in May of 2022, she hasn't really taken on a major project, but now she's about to do something big, isn't she?
She's returning to her roots. Well, not really the ground, the water. She's returning to Dory. Remember that ditzy fish that she brought to light in Finding Nemo? She's going to do a new short film from Pixar that'll probably be with one of their bigger releases next year. And it's Dory again, and we don't know if the other Finding Nemo people will be there, including Albert Brooks, who's so good as Nemo's dad. But Dory was one of the breakouts from the first movie. The first film grossed over $1 billion worldwide, and that's Dory's solo effort. So surprising that they're not making a bigger movie, but maybe this is to, quote-unquote, test the water. Sorry, we needed a pun there.
Of course. We're about 3 weeks away from getting caught up with all the goings-on at the Dutton Ranch. What's the latest on this?
Well, if we want to borrow some cowboy talk, they're having a peck of trouble, Bob, because 3 weeks away, the showrunner and executive producer, Chad Feehan, he's been axed. You know, little cowboy problems. No one's really saying, of course, what happened. But the helpful news is Taylor Sheridan doesn't last with these showrunners usually. They usually get replaced, so it's not the biggest deal, although it made headlines everywhere. But we still have Beth and Rip, and we even have a tagline now, which is, blood runs deeper, forgiveness is fleeting, and the cost of survival just might be your soul. I mean, May 15th can't come soon enough, right?
I know, a lot of people waiting for that. Cindy Perlman Gabriel in Las Vegas. Thank you, Cindy. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Bob.
Michael, audiences seem to like it a lot, not so much critics. Let's find out what our critic thought. It's Blockbuster Blake. What'd you think?
Well, Bob, it's been a mixed bag for me. There are things about this movie that I really did enjoy. There are things about this movie that I'm wrestling with. There are things about this movie that I flat out just didn't like. I'm going to start with what I feel are the problems. I want to get those out of the way because I think the end part of what I have to say today is going to be the thing that a lot of moviegoers are going to resonate with, and then it'll influence whether or not they want to see the movie, maybe. The big thing for me is that, obviously, it goes without saying, this is a biopic of the king of pop, Michael Jackson. It is very much a controlled telling of the story of the life of one of the world's most well-known, incredible, but also complicated artists. Last week, you and I had a very brief discussion about how certain members of the family wanted nothing to do with this picture. One of them in particular, Janet's sister, who is also mega famous in her own right. Janet is not even a character in this film. Her wishes were to be completely omitted from it. There's a lot of controversy, obviously. The more you know about the King of Pop, it's going to come up. And somehow this film manages to ignore a great deal of it. My problem, I think, boils down to the connective tissue of this movie, meaning the family drama elements. Anytime Michael's not in a studio, anytime, and I'm speaking more about the character of Michael, anytime the character of Michael's not in a music studio or on a stage, there's a lot to wrestle with this film because it's doing everything it can to thread a needle and tell this very complicated story safely. It needs a villain. And so the villain of this movie is Joe Jackson, the father of the Jackson 5, and obviously a very controversial figure in his own right. You also have to look forward to the idea that this movie, to me, is like a fairy tale retelling of the story of the boy who loved fairy tales. And so as the credits begin to roll, there's a lot of mixed emotions because of how it tells its story is a bit problematic, and that's maybe even putting it a bit lightly. But the musical elements of this movie are just as incredible as they are the songs they are themselves to listen to. So yeah. It's a biopic. So there's always going to be a lot of subjectivity that muddles the sort of, you know, the truth of the matter. And a lot of the hosts involved, I mean, this movie has 10 executive producers, all of which range from members of the family to Michael's own personal attorney, John Branca, who's a character in the film, played by Miles Teller. So, yeah, this is a movie that was a long time coming. I mean, it was impacted by the writer's strike a couple of years ago. Another reason why it probably took so long to finalize is that it has four editors listed just on IMDb, one of which is John Ottman, who was the Oscar-winning editor for Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a problematic biopic in and of itself and also shares producers with this film. So I did read a quip the other day on Twitter that actually pointed out this movie is like the second entry in the Bohemian Rhapsody cinematic universe. And I wish I knew who I could attribute that quote to, but that is sort of the same feeling that I got while I was watching Michael. It did remind me of the same type of story notes, beats, and structure, down to a Mike Myers cameo, and ties more in with something like Bohemian Rhapsody than, say, A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan picture that starred Timothy Chalamet in recent years. So that's the bad. That's where I had problems with this movie. That's where this movie did not work for me. But I keep mentioning the music and the musical moments. That is where this movie does shine. Joffrey Jackson, playing his uncle, Michael, is at moments completely uncanny. The magic trick of movies, making me believe as an audience member that an actor is someone else entirely. They managed to pull it off quite a few times in this film. Colman Domingo as Joe Jackson. I mentioned the film needed a villain. Well, they got a great actor to step in and play that role. And I find that performance quite nuanced. I bought in from moment one with him. And, you know, lastly, I do want to give a brief shout out because at the very beginning of the movie, you're dealing with Michael in the 60s when he was the young front man of the Jackson 5. And Giuliano Cruvaldi is the young man who plays young Michael. And I think he's also quite fantastic. And I haven't seen as many people talking up his performance. But yeah, there's good, there's bad. It's a real mixed bag. For me, it's how the story's told. It's not so much, you know, the nuts and bolts. The thing I think I bought a ticket for, which was to see an uncanny recreation of Michael Jackson live on a stage with a real cinematic treatment that's more in tune with the modern style of filmmaking. And Antoine Fuqua, who is a well-respected director in my book, has done a good job of those key moments. It's the big picture that I just keep running into problems with.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I mentioned earlier, I don't know that you need to see it on IMAX, but go to a theater with good sound. It's worth it to get out of the house and hear it that way. I thought the story, the script, was not as complete and as good as, say, Bohemian Rhapsody. But you're right. It's all about the music. And by the way, it was fun to see the Jacksons at the Regal Theater on the south side of Chicago depicted in this movie. And, you know, we'll talk a little more about this later this morning, but apparently they may get into the controversies in the sequel. Is that your understanding?
The film ends in a way that, you know, I'll just give the time period. I'm not going to say the key moments, but the film ends in 1988. So there is plenty more story to be told here. And the magnetism of where Jackson was in his career in 1988 and what that new era of his music was going to be certainly leaves open enough material for when this movie, you know, takes its last dollar at the box office, which will be a great deal of dollars. If I know you've already sort of talked about it this morning, but, you know, the film cleared $215 million worldwide over its opening weekend. That is massive. And I think it goes without saying there's more story to tell. It's just you got to really thread the needle to tell it, especially if it's going to be in keeping with this.
Yeah. Talk about more what happened, why they had to recut this movie. We'll get to that a little later. Thank you, Blockbuster Blake. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Before we get to the news, which is coming up in just 30 seconds here, I do want to mention Matt DeCaro passing, a celebrated local actor. He died Saturday. He was 70, a mainstay at the Goodman Theater. He acted in television shows like ER and Chicago Fire. May Matt DeCaro's memory be a blessing.